Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Plan Lehigh Valley. This program is presented along with our partners from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. I'm here with my co-host, Becky Bradley, the Executive Director of the Planning Commission, and also Matt Assad, its Managing Editor. Thank you both for being here.
Good evening.
Good evening.
All right, tonight we're going to focus on the kind of emerging high-profile industrial land uses, such as data centers, that bring a lot of investment to a community, but also have the potential to bring drastic changes. As our guest today, we have Jill Seitz, who is the Chief Community and Regional Planner at the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, where she leads initiatives that shape and manage the region's growth, sustainability, and quality of life. Jill is an expert on Pennsylvania planning, zoning, and land use, and has played a key role in projects that include developing Future LV, the regional plan, and the Lehigh Valley Housing Supply and Attainability Strategy, bringing together hundreds of stakeholders across industries and sectors to create a business plan for increasing housing production and addressing the region's housing shortage. Jill works closely with local governments, organizations, and community members to advance regional goals and policies. She combines a passion for data and information sharing to foster community partnerships that support data-driven decision making. Welcome, Jill.
Thanks for having me.
So, Matt, why don't we start off with explanation of what the Lehigh County Industrial Land Use Guide is?
So this guide is going to help communities address existing industrial impacts and plan for emerging industrial uses that are coming down the pipe. So we're giving communities a roadmap for handling the brand of warehouses, logistics centers, and manufacturing plants that we've been seeing over the past decade, but also the many uses that are arriving as technology advances. The pace of these tech advancements is so fast now, and this is designed to help communities prepare for the many next big things. Everybody's talking about data centers, and Becky and Jill are certainly going to talk about that, and probably even some of the things you have not heard of yet. They'll be laying out potential impacts of these uses and how the guide is going to help communities prepare. It used to be that you could measure planning in, years or decades, and now it really comes down to trends happening in a matter of months, and you have to change with with the trends, and that's kind of what this is about, sort of preparing folks so that they're not caught off guard.
Becky, why? I mean, I think Matt sort of alluded to this with like things are changing so fast and so quickly, but why do we need this guide?
Our local governments absolutely rely on us to give them advice. And actually, interestingly enough, it's an embedded legal role in the Pennsylvania Municipalities Planning Code that governs what county planning agencies like ourselves do, along with local governments and what they have to plan for and prepare for. We really don't want to have a situation where our local governments are caught flat-footed, like what happened when the initial kind of e-commerce boom hit our region. And we really were woken up to the fact that we are within a single trucker's shift of about 10 million consumers in the eastern US up into even Canada, and that our relationship to the major metros around us, primarily the New York, North Jersey metro, and also to some extent the Philadelphia metro, were affecting our economy in substantial ways. And I think that underscores the need to talk about things and prepare our local governments for things like data centers and other forms of telecommunications hubs, other uses of data centers, including cryptocurrency mining. And Jill's going to talk to you about some other emerging and emerged land uses as well. It cannot be underscored, italicized, highlighted enough, put a few exclamation points on the end of it too. But our connection and proximity to the New York Metro has a major effect on our region. Think about one of the major global commerce centers in the world is in Manhattan. And that is within 2 hours or less of the Lehigh Valley. The vulnerabilities of having things concentrated in one location from security aspects, whether it be physical security or cybersecurity or other things, can't be underscored enough, and the need to have adjacent regions be supportive of these major global industrial centers, while also, you know, being a major global industrial center ourselves, and that interconnectivity between the two is enormous. And we can't think of ourselves as something over there any longer. The private sector has made that decision, and we have to rise to those challenges and use the tools that we have available to us to appropriately plan for all these new types of uses, which could have great economic benefit to us, could potentially not have great other forms of benefits. But if we manage it, we can make it have the best profile of benefits as possible. So helping our local governments who are in charge of regulating land use prepare for what's here already and then what we can reasonably foresee is coming next is critical to the success that we want.
This reminds me of a conversation that was happening probably two decades ago. And you and I were both kind of in this world with Wall Street West after 9/11.
Yep.
And how we needed to prepare being close to New York in helping to kind of secure an infrastructure that would support New York City if their data was wiped out by two planes hitting buildings, right?
Right. Conversation so again, right?
Right. Well, I guess we didn't advance that enough. Is that fair to say? Or are we just in a totally different, like, light year?
I think we're in a totally different light year because that conversation was advanced in a whole host of ways. And then that morphed and evolved is, you know, Hurricane Sandy came through and we literally had climate refugees in the Lehigh Valley. Then it evolved even more as the e-commerce boom, which was really driven by Sandy into our region because the port of New York and New Jersey was just flooded, right? So especially fresh and frozen goods, distribution operations for grocery stores and manufacturers. I mean, they had lost electricity at the port. And so they saw that we had lower taxes in Pennsylvania. We had a faster land development process than North Jersey or New York City. And they saw also that we had lower land costs. And we still do, though we don't exactly, we have feels about that, right? I think that's the best way to say that. That's good and bad, right? So that's when we start seeing the grocery store back distribution networks come over. And then it evolved into other things and really helped advance our existing manufacturing base. Then COVID came in. We were dealing with supplies and other things. So we actually have had a very strong emergency management services or what we call hazard mitigation related role in the transportation of goods and services for decades. I would say, you know, almost the length of the founding of the Lehigh Valley, 290 years, if you really want to get nerdy and historical about it. But, you know, last 20 years have been a game changer for our region for sure. And a lot of it has to do with that rise of global commerce, but also the rise of new vulnerabilities or enhancement of existing vulnerabilities, even though no one wants to have enhanced flooding scenarios. It is happening. None of us control the weather. And so how do we, you know, address those situations? So slowly over time, you've started to see everything from the private sector to the public sector really invest in our region as being critical to not only those major metros, especially the New York metro, but for our own health, safety, and welfare. And I mean, I think that's just going to be the ongoing conversation. It's kind of the rule of the day, so to speak.
Hmm. So you touched on a few of these, just even talking about the weather and the hurricanes. But what are some of the emerging land uses that communities have to prepare for?
Sure. So I think a lot of the emerging land uses that we're seeing, they're really like modern day evolved versions of many of the uses that we've already had in the region. We've kind of already touched on freight and logistics uses. You know, people are still buying items online, having them shipped directly to their doorsteps. And there's a high demand for how quickly those items arrive. You know, once you hit order, how quickly they get to your doorstep, you know, that really affects a business's competitiveness. And so we see a lot of businesses increasingly incorporating technologies that make their shipping faster, that make their storage spaces more efficient. And so that's really driving a lot of the changes that we're seeing in that space. We also have seen, and I'm going to try to kind of, because there's a wide range of these industrial uses, but I'm going to try to boil them down to just a few overarching categories. So we also know in the advanced manufacturing space, if you think of what traditional manufacturing has been for a long time, where workers in factories are assembling and producing goods, advanced manufacturing is really incorporating a lot of the technologies that we have today, like automation, using robotics, 3D printing, artificial intelligence, all these technologies that can improve the products that they're making or make them in new ways or expedite those processes to create them quicker. So we are seeing advanced manufacturing in the region already. We know that we've had data centers in the region before too, so that's another big overarching category. But we've had them on a much smaller scale that people probably didn't even realize that we had them, but they've already been critical to supporting our digital infrastructure ever since, you know, the internet exploded and everybody got their own cell phones. Data centers are really essential to supporting that. And what we have throughout the region is a few smaller scale facilities. Sometimes businesses may even have their own. Maybe they wouldn't call them a data center, but it's essentially the same thing, you know, like a room or a separate building that houses computer equipment that supports servers and data management for businesses. But what a lot of people are thinking about now is what's known as hyperscale data centers. And so those are those really large, you know, you might think of like 1 million square foot building footprint that really are for the purpose of managing data and storing data on a very large scale. And we kind of think of this as a larger digital infrastructure and tech facilities category because data center is really just one aspect of managing data. You know, you also have businesses that use data centers for cryptocurrency mining. And so you may have an entire data center facility just for the purpose of cryptocurrency. And that's one use case. We also see telecommunications hubs where data centers are really more so used to process and store data and information. Those telecommunications hubs are used to route and connect data to its destination. So it's really a larger infrastructure network of all these different uses kind of operating together. And it's really driven by the demand of us all using technology on the day-to-day. You know, every time you pick up your cell phone and you Google something on the internet, or you call or text somebody, use a streaming service to watch a show for a couple hours, all of that touches a data center and a telecommunication hub at some point in order to make the system work. The last kind of category that I'll touch on, it's really an important one because all of these advancements demand so much electricity and power usage. And so energy generation and storage is a major land use category that we're seeing in order to meet the demands of all these facilities that have really substantial power demands. And so we'll see those require utility upgrades, and many new facilities like a data center may even include in their proposals their own power generation. So that's something that we're looking at. But energy generation and storage is another adjacent land use category that will be really essential to supporting the continued evolution of these industrial land uses.
Okay, wow. So what I didn't hear you say, I think I didn't hear you say it, was you didn't talk about AI and how that is impacting data center usage and size. Is that something else that you're looking at?
Absolutely. And that I would think of that as another use case really for data centers. You know, AI is another computing function where you're moving data, you're pulling data, and so it's tapping into those data centers and telecommunications hubs in order to generate the information and then transmit it to devices.
Yeah, it's the same thing like with a cryptocurrency mining operation. It's any of that stuff. Like data centers host all of those things. And I think that's the interesting conversation because people automatically think data center and they only think AI, but they can do many, 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 many things. So people, I think, used to call them server farms, right? And this is like the next generation of the old school server farm that we need more and more and more of them is rely more and more and more on information and data sharing, analytics of information, distribution of that.
Yeah, and it's amazing how much energy they use. I mean, that's kind of the big thing. I heard one of our partners at PPL the other day said that it took them 100 years to ramp up to peak usage of 7.5 megawatts. And they're going to have to double that in the next 5 years, which is amazing. What it took them a century to do, they're going to have to figure out a way to double.
Yeah, I've heard a couple analogies that kind of helped for me really conceptualize how much energy they really use. So if you streamed a show for 2 hours, it would be the equivalent of running a large space heater for 30 minutes. So that is just one example, just like from the data center to the transmission to it arriving on your device, like 2 hours of like streaming a show, you don't really think about it, just is kind of part of most people's day to day. But it's the equivalent of running a space heater for 30 minutes. Another analogy is if you've ever Googled what a data center looks like on the inside, you see rows of server racks, and each one of those cabinets is about the size of a refrigerator. Well, one refrigerator-sized cabinet requires as much energy as over 1,000 refrigerators in the same footprint. Yes, and that can really vary depending on how full they build out the cabinets, but on average, these hyperscale data centers, the same amount of space as a refrigerator, but it's pulling the power of 1,000 refrigerators, and then you multiply that times thousands of those cabinets inside one hyperscale data center.
I've seen some statistic that say these mega data centers use the power of up to 500,000 homes. That's we don't have any cities that big, and one data center uses that.
But we do have them now, as Jill mentioned earlier, just not at that large of scale. I think one thing is really important is a colleague that I've known for, I'm almost going to say probably 15 to 20 years at this point. I met him when he was early in his career and he was working here in the Lehigh Valley. And he's since moved back to York, Pennsylvania, and has built a really wonderful career in York and really smart guy, works in community economic development. I saw him yesterday at a meeting and he came up to me and he said, I heard you guys are working on, a guide for local governments on data centers. I said, yeah, we are. We're travels fast. And he said, are they really the Godzillas that everyone is making them out to be? And it caused me to pause, like someone referring to a data center as a Godzilla. And I think in that moment, I really realized that there is some level of worry about these that, sure, that makes sense to be concerned about it. But I think the whole point of this guide is it's not as dramatic as the rumor mill likes to make it out to be. And why the guide and the timing of the guide is so important, because we have to have quality information and data going to our communities so they can make logical decisions versus making emotional decisions, or they will have appropriate answers to things when people ask them similar questions, right? It's a legitimate question. How bad are they, right? How good are they? Is the opposite of that. You really have to ask yourself both of those when you're legislating for how you want your community to grow, where you want it to grow, and the like. So everything from noise and heat and light and water and sewer and all of these things are part of that conversation. Matt alluded to it, but we have been talking to industry partners to get a better understanding of that. It's absolutely critical that we don't operate off of hearsay, and that we really do understand how these facilities operate and what they consume. at the largest end of the scale, right down to the smallest end of the scale. So everyone knows about these big billion plus dollar data centers. There's quite a lot of press and dialogue on social media around them. But there's also everything in between. And as we know with technology in general, the longer these are around, the more efficient, the less consumptive they're going to become because of the cost associated with all of that. And these are being run by businesses. And what's a business's motivation? Profit. It's not their only motivation, but you know, it is a primary objective, right? So they're not going to want to spend tons and tons and tons of money on operating and maintenance costs associated with these things because it will cut into their ability to be accountable to shareholders if they're publicly traded or just to make money. But the other thing I think is important on this too is if the really big ones are over $1 billion to build, you're not going to see like 20 of them. And so the idea that they're coming to your town near you right now in that kind of dramatic response is not really, really helpful. And that gets back to quality, consistent information getting out to communities so they're aware of what these really are, what they need to plan for, and how to manage it.
Okay, so that's a great segue to talk about the guide that you're building or you're creating. Who's going to need it and what's in it? What kind of things can people expect to get out of the guide?
Well, I'll just start off with this and then I'll kick it over to Jill. A guide, our land use guides now are the modern version of what used to be called model ordinances. I love this idea that oddly persists that every community is the same. So like one model ordinance is going to solve all of the world's problems. I mean, that's absolutely ludicrous. So we have a very modern way of thinking about things, right? You have to deal with the issues in the moment. That's the responsibility of planning and governance, right? So our model guide gives people examples of if this is the scale of your community, then this is how you should be thinking about this. Here's basic information. So just wanted to keep on working and dispelling the myth and the legend of the model ordinance, because our city of Allentown is very different than Bath Borough or, you know, Bethlehem Township. You're not going to regulate the same. And so I'll kick it over to Jill to tell you guys a little bit more about the guide.
Yeah, we're really building the guide to be for everybody involved in shaping development. So that could be, you know, in local governments, elected officials, their planning commissions, zoning hearing boards. But then also any staff, you know, managers, municipal engineers. But even beyond that, it's also for developers to also understand, you know, what impacts these projects have on communities. It's even for residents, you know, to more fully understand why these uses are emerging. You know, why does the industry evolve? What role does everybody play in that? What could be the impacts on the communities and what they should really expect their local governments to be doing to address them? So the idea is really to make sure that everybody's working from the same place of information. And then when a industrial project does become proposed in a community, that's empowering local leaders and also the community with knowledge and confidence in the tools that they have to manage any of those impacts. Earlier, we mentioned the Pennsylvania Municipalities Planning Code, which provides a lot of tools to communities now already to manage some of these uses. So the guide provides some specific examples of how communities should be looking at their comprehensive plans and their zoning ordinances and their subdivision and land development ordinances all together to make sure that they're including current best practices and considerations for addressing, you know, utility impacts and traffic or transportation impacts, air quality, visual, aesthetic impacts, all of those considerations. And the guide will also include some key questions that communities should be asking a developer when a project is proposed, you know, to help better assess what impact projects will have on an individual level.
Okay, so as we're wrapping up here today, We have a few minutes left, but I'm interested in knowing, if communities want, can they just say no to these uses and can they choose not to have them?
So, under Pennsylvania law, municipalities are not able to outright ban land uses. They can decide where those uses are appropriate and also how they should be designed. And that is what zoning is for. And zoning should, of course, be determined based on their visioning for their communities through comprehensive plans. But really, they can make sure that the right uses go in the right places and that those impacts are managed responsibly. And the guide is really intended to help the governments think through that, how to plan for them thoughtfully rather than reacting when a project is filed, how we saw a lot of times when the logistics industry massively expanded here.
Okay, so when can stakeholders begin using this guide?
We're working on wrapping up the document. And so through the end of this year, we'll have that finalized and released, and then we'll look at having some additional training for communities early next year as well.
So that's pretty soon in sort of planning world. A couple of months, they'll be ready to roll.
Yeah, we are at the end of the year here. That's great. So there'll be a tool coming to you, and where can they find this guide?
It will be on lvpc.org. We're actually doing the guide in partnership with Lehigh County as their planning agency. So it'll go out to our Lehigh County local governments first. And then Jill and I are plotting a few things here after the guide is done. And we're hoping to do some training specifically with our local governments in the new year. And we'll be sorting that out as part of our work plan development process. But we know just putting out the guide is not enough, and continuing to advocate with our local governments to support them in updating their codes to make sure they're prepared for these things, and really looking at where these can go. Because you should zone practically, right? Like, where should something go? It's probably where you should zone for it. Or if you really don't have a good place for it to go, and they're in a multi-municipal plan. Which community is the best place for these types of uses to go? And because they can share uses if they're in a joint comprehensive plan. So we're really excited about the guide and hopeful that it will have a great deal of utility for the people in our region.
Good. All right. Well, we are out of time for this episode of Plan Lehigh Valley. We've been talking with Becky Bradley, Matt Assad, and Jill Seitz from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission. You can always listen to this program again by going to wdiy.org, the app, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll talk again next month.